The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Thursday, everyone. And it's not just any Thursday. Oh, no, it is the first Thursday of May, which has been, believe it or not, in this land that extols the separation of church and state, this first Thursday of May designated by the United States Congress as the National Day of Prayer. I don't know. I turned to Wikipedia to find out where the hell this came from. And each year since its inception, the president has signed a proclamation encouraging all Americans to pray on this day. It goes on to say the modern law formalizing its annual observance was enacted in 1952. Although earlier days of fasting and prayer had been established by the Second Continental Congress from 1775 until 1783 and by President John Adams in 1798 and again in 1799, Thomas Jefferson established a day of prayer and thanksgiving, but that was when he was governor of Virginia. Apparently, there is some connection between the National Day of Prayer and the holiday known as Thanksgiving. But Thanksgiving is most decidedly a secular holiday. So where this came from, I don't know. The constitutionality of the National Day of Prayer was unsuccessfully challenged in court by the Freedom from Religious the Freedom from Religion Foundation. And they've done it a couple of times, but they've their first attempt was unanimously dismissed by a federal appellate court in April of 2011. So you have all these hypocrites, trying to push their religions on you in this land where there is no national religion. And, there's supposed to be no penalty for even your choice of having no religion. Go figure. I don't know. Don't know. Occasionally on this program, we do an Oy Florida segment. Deborah Newell Tornello was here last week. We pulled one out. And I'm not going to go into a full long litany. I just have to share with you one of the most Oy Florida things that I've seen in a long time. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see I'm holding up the South Florida Sun Sentinel. It's our local Broward County newspaper here. And you'll see the lead story there. It says Lauderdale airport shooter agrees to guilty plea, life term. We did have a mass shooting in Fort Lauderdale airport a couple of years ago. It doesn't say right here exactly when it was. But five people were killed and six more were injured in a mass shooting at Fort Lauderdale airport. And as the headline reads, the shooter agreed to plead guilty in exchange for a life sentence, so he won't, he won't get the death penalty. Right below it, it says "Remembering Alyssa," and there's a picture there. What this is, it's a story about Alyssa Al-Hadef, who was one of the victims of the Parkland shooting, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. It says family and friends of Parkland shooting victim Alyssa Al-Hadef attend an unveiling of her headstone at the Star of David Memorial Garden Cemetery in North Lauderdale on Tuesday on what would have been her 15th birthday. And the reason I'm pointing these out, these are the two front page stories in the Broward County big newspaper, the Sun Sentinel. And if you go down to the bottom of the page, there you see it across all columns, a big ad for the Fort Lauderdale Gun Show. Present this coupon for $1 off admission May 5th and 6th at the War Memorial Auditorium, where they're constantly holding gun shows. Pointing out the craziness of it all. There's craziness coming out of D.C. If you were near the television last night, you saw that Rudolph Giuliani went on Sean Hannity's show. And boy, did he have a lot to say. I'll tell you, the Trump administration had enough of the crazy before they brought in Rudy. Really. This is a guy who hasn't practiced law in I don't know how many decades. And yet he's now one of Trump's lead counsels. I don't get it at all. In fact, I do cover it a lot in What's News, so I'm not gonna go into too much detail, except one quick clip. I didn't get to watch Sarah Sanders' White House briefing session today because it was just in the moments leading up to the start of the show, and I'm kind of busy at that time. But I was able to pull one clip where the question was, and the questions are surrounding the fact that that nobody seemed to know what Giuliani was going to say to Hannity last night. And in fact, many didn't learn, many in the White House legal office and in the White House offices themselves didn't learn what Giuliani was going to say until he actually said it. And here's a question regarding that.
Secondly, on the other topic in the news today, could you explain why the president, when he answered questions to reporters a few weeks ago about the $130,000 payment for Michael Cohen to Stormy Daniels, why the president was not truthful with the American people and with the people in this room?
As Mayor Giuliani stated, and I'll refer you back to his comments, this was information that the president didn't know at the time but eventually learned.
Information the president didn't know at the time, but eventually learned. So the president didn't know that Michael Cohen had paid Stormy Daniels $130,000 on her behalf, on his behalf, to shut her up. Come on, I'm so sick of the lies. And this is an administration that knows nothing but lies. And again, they all took offense about being called liars at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. It is the gaslighting of America. I got to tell you, there's a new book out about the gaslighting of America. And I got all excited when I saw it. And I thought, oh, I'm going to have to track down this author and have her on the show. But it's Amanda Carpenter, who worked for Ted Cruz, who is, a right winger. And I'm glad that she sees that the Trump administration is gaslighting America. But she's as guilty of it as the rest of them. So I'll not be trying to get her on the show. And just hope that more people talk about how they're gaslighting the country. Yes, the news that, thank you, Vermont Gina, in the chat room. And news, Cohen was tapped. It's not looking great for Teen Trump. Yeah, this came out after the news that I wrote today. That we had known that Cohen's phones were tapped. Apparently, perhaps one or maybe more of the phone calls from Trump to Cohen or vice versa was picked up. No, it's not really looking good for Team Trump these days. But we'll see what happens. All right. It is Thursday. And with Thursday brings Howie Klein. So he'll be along around the bottom of the hour. But first, let's get to this insanity that is known as What's News. And yes, once again, we'll do it live. Do it live.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So, as I mentioned before, Rudy Giuliani appeared on Sean Hannity's TV show on Fox last night and dropped a few bombshells, including admitting that Donald Trump had known about the $130,000 in hush money paid to adult film star Stormy Daniels since he had reimbursed lawyer Michael Cohen for the expense.
Are you concerned in the process of this? We did discover that a foreign national, Christopher Steele, was paid through Fusion GPS, used Russian sources that not only weren't verified, but were debunked. Are you concerned that that was paid for to manipulate the American people in the lead up to an election?
Isn't that closer to the mandate than Michael Cohen?
Why isn't that having something? Where's Mueller on that, sir?
Having something to do with paying some Stormy Daniels woman $130,000? I mean,
some Stormy Daniels woman. I love how, you know, he refers to her in such a dismissive tone. Some Stormy Daniels woman, as if he's, you know, better than she.
Which is going to turn out to be perfectly legal.
Oh, really?
That money was not campaign money.
Really?
Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know.
Oh.
It's not campaign money. No campaign finance violation.
Really?
So
he knows that,
through the law firm.
They funneled
through the law firm, and the president repaid
it. Through the law firm.
Oh, I didn't know. He did.
Yeah.
There's no campaign finance law.
Zero.
So the president.
Just like every, Sean.
So this decision was made by.
Everybody was nervous about this from the very beginning. I wasn't. I knew how much money Donald Trump put into that campaign. I said, $130,000. He's going to do a couple of checks for $130,000. When I heard Cohen's retainer of $35,000, when he was doing no work for the president, I said, but that's how he's repaying. That's how he's repaying it, with a little profit and a little margin for paying taxes for Michael.
Man.
The president, but do you know the president didn't know about this? I believe that's what
he didn't
Michael
know about
said.
The specifics of it.
Of course,
as far
not.
As I know, but he did
not.
Know about the general arrangement that Michael would take care of things like this, like I take care of things like this for my clients.
You don't have clients.
I don't burden them with every single thing that comes along. These are busy people.
These are busy people. Rudy Giuliani, you don't have any clients because you're not a practicing attorney, number one. Number two, if what he's saying there is true, then Donald Trump must pay off hundreds of women in a similar manner if he's not bothered with the little details of each little, you know, measly $130,000 payout. And it's, you know, it's the $35,000 a month retainer that goes to Michael Cohen. And he doesn't do a lot of work for it, you know, because he's not really, he only did a teeny, teeny bit of work. Therefore, no attorney-client privilege should come into play here. The whole thing is just a giant line of bullshit, right? Well, see, the news there directly contradicts Trump's statement last month that he had no knowledge that Cohen had paid Daniels. Remember, reporters aboard Air Force One had asked whether Trump knew about the payment, to which the president replied, quote, no. Well, Trump or somebody on his behalf took to Twitter early this morning to weigh in very legalese, with only one major typo that I could discern, so leading me to believe Trump didn't write these tweets. But the tweets, a series of three of them, basically said that non-disclosure agreements are very common among celebrities and people of wealth, and added that this one was used to stop, quote, false and extortionist accusations. I think I smell another defamation suit coming on from Michael Avenatti. Giuliani said a lot more in his hour-long sit-down with Hannity, showing that they're still obsessed with Hillary Clinton, going off on James Comey as being a liar and a perverted man. Let's start with the liar part first.
This is a completely tainted investigation.
Explain.
Well, you have an investigation in which Mueller is selected the day after he's turned down for FBI director.
Mueller is chosen, wasn't necessarily turned down for FBI director. I think he went in for an interview as a courtesy, but not that he would have wanted the job, but I guess we'll never really know. But he was chosen because Trump fired Comey.
By Rosenstein, who was there when Mueller was turned down.
And it's Rosenstein.
There are thousands of people that could have been selected for that job. Also a friend of James Comey.
So?
And James Comey seems to be their core of their investigation. He's telling the truth. The president isn't. I know James Comey. I know the president. Sorry, Jim. You're a liar.
Ooh.
A disgraceful liar. Every FBI agent in America has his head down because of you.
That is so not true. Because I know an FBI agent, and James Comey is still held in very high regard among the FBI. Rudolph Giuliani is, you know, the only person who puts him to shame as a liar is his boss, Donald Trump.
It would have been good for God if God had kept you out of being head of the FBI.
Oh, my God.
Explain where he lied.
Well, he lied. He lied about his conversation with McCabe. He knew all of McCabe's conflicts. McCabe should testify against him. He lied about his conversations with the president. He only told the truth when the president said, "I may." We know Donald. I'm sorry, Mr. President. He was Donald before. He lied about the fact that they talked about whether the president was a subject or a target. Then he immediately changed it. It's one lie after another.
Rod Rosenstein, everybody forgets when he wrote that
Rosenstein
that recommendation to fire Comey. He said that the FBI cannot be reestablished if he stayed at the helm.
Yeah, why? Because he's a liar. His conduct of the Hillary Clinton investigation was a total disgrace. If Hillary Clinton had been elected president, he wouldn't have lasted past day one. We know she would have fired him. I don't think she'd even deny that today. She was right. We should have fired him. And when I say we, I mean the collective we here, day one.
And maybe he should have, but that's not what they did, and they fired him. Well, why did they fire him, Giuliani?
Are they objective?
Are they?
Well, right now, a lot of things point in the direction of they made up their mind that Comey's telling the truth and not the president. When you
He's
look
talking
at those questions
about
what does the president
Mueller.
Think, what does the president feel, what does the president really desire? Those are all questions intended to trap him in some way in contradicting what is, in fact, a very, very solid explanation of what happened. He fired Comey because Comey would not, among other things, say that he wasn't a target of the investigation.
And there you have it. Because Comey wouldn't come out and say that Trump was not a target of the investigation. That's why he fired him. But that's one of half a dozen reasons Trump has given as to why he fired him, which is the reason he doesn't want to go and have to testify before Mueller, certainly not under oath, because the man can't keep a story straight, because all he knows how to do is lie. I got to get to this perverted comment. Giuliani was just smearing Comey left and right, and this one takes the cake.
I do not know why the Justice Department is not investigating you.
Did James Comey
fix the whole case again?
It was rigged.
Well, you can't read that stupid report that he wrote, which is the beginning of his destruction, in which he says we're not going to prosecute. No reasonable prosecutor would indict her. No honest, reasonable prosecutor wouldn't indict her.
He said today or yesterday, Comey, he said Hillary deeply respects the rule of law. Comey said that.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, this is a very perverted man.
A very perverted
man.
I
feel so sorry.
Do we have a two-tier justice system in America?
Yeah, we have one for Hillary and
oh, my God.
And all those Democrats, Bill Clinton.
Is equal justice under the law at risk?
You and I have talked about this. I am very afraid, not just for our president, but for our country.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, Opposite World.
It's amazing. It is. We are in such opposite world. The gaslighting is so strong. Comey is a perverted man. And there's a double standard where Hillary gets off. Hillary, who has been persecuted. And yes, I meant to use the word persecuted over Benghazi for how long now? And Trump. No collusion. There's no collusion. There's collusion. There's collusion in those questions, even though they tell you that there isn't, that the subject matter doesn't go to collusion. The sky is blue. I promise you, go outside and look. We are not going crazy. We're not the crazy ones. If you kept listening to this Rudy Giuliani interview with Sean Hannity, you might question the sanity of the nation. I don't even know where to go with this. I just know I had to play this clip. Giuliani seemed to be taken off guard when he was asked about what if Mueller goes after Ivanka and Jared.
If they do Ivanka, which I doubt they will, the whole country will turn on him.
What?
They're going after his daughter.
What about his son-in-law? They've talked about him.
I guess Jared is a fine man. You know that. But men are, you know, disposable. But a fine woman like Ivanka, come on.
What did I just hear? Men are disposable, but a fine woman like Ivanka? Come on. The nation will turn on them if they go after his daughter. What has Ivanka Trump ever done to warrant her position in the White House? I'm waiting. 954-889-6410. Skype to Nicole Sandler. Phone lines are open. Not a damn thing, but the nation will turn on them if they go after Ivanka. I think they're just still waiting to go after the bigger targets last. Still to come, Ivanka and Jared and Roger Stone, who appears to be a target of some sorts. But there was some unintended comedy as well. Giuliani touted Trump as the best president in his lifetime. I kid you not.
This is our best president in my memory. In 2 years, even my hero, Ronald Reagan, he straightened the economy out the way President Trump did. But he didn't get this far ahead on foreign policy as fast as President Trump has. Look at what's going on with North Korea. I've told the president you're going to get the Nobel Peace Prize. And my proudest moment is when you tell him to shove it.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
By the way, no. This is cable. You're good. We're good here.
He's not going to tell him to shove it because he had the crowd chanting, Nobel, 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 as if Donald Trump is going to get the Nobel Peace Prize. My only hope is that he doesn't fuck it up so badly that we wind up blowing up, you know, that whole part of the world and taking ourselves with us. All right. Well, that's a bit of the shit show that went on Fox Sean Hannity show last night. There's more. The Department of Justice refused a request from House conservatives to turn over an unredacted memo detailing the scope of the Mueller probe. Those same lawmakers have actually drawn up articles of impeachment for Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, pronounced Rosenstein, who is overseeing the Mueller probe. Rosenstein said this week he will not be extorted. The president, frustrated by what he views as stonewalling at justice, lashed out over Twitter, threatening to, quote, get involved if the DOJ doesn't hand over the documents lawmakers are requesting. See, Donald Trump doesn't understand that it's not his Justice Department. It is the Department of Justice, and it serves the American people, not the president. It's not his personal protector. Former Trump campaign aide Michael Caputo met with Mueller's team yesterday. Earlier in the week, Caputo cursed the Senate Intelligence Committee, accusing Democrats of driving him into financial ruin because of the Russia probe. He says that the special counsel is still investigating collusion.
So based on your interview today, how much does Mueller's team know, do you think?
Well, I think the Mueller team knew more about what I did in 2016 than I knew myself. And I think they know more about the Trump campaign than anyone that ever worked there. These guys have got every single email, anything that's ever gone down. And they're clearly focused on trying to identify some Russian collusion.
So can I just ask, how long were you there?
I was there 3 hours. I would compare it to a proctology appointment with a very large-handed doctor.
Okay.
It was an awful experience.
And you had an attorney present. Does your attorney jump in at times?
Yes, he is. And he's former New York Attorney General Dennis Vacco. He prepared me for this over the weekend. We've been working on it for a little while. We've known for about a week or so. You know, I'm a witness. That's what the AUSA who interviewed me today told me. I'm a witness, not a subject or a target. But it really doesn't matter. Once you get in that room, it's fraught with peril.
It sounds like it wasn't a very pleasant experience. But what Michael Caputo did say is they know what they're doing. They know more about the Trump campaign than anybody who worked on the Trump campaign. So, you know, I guess we just got to have the faith, baby. Come on, it's National Prayer Day. Keep the faith. As we mentioned yesterday, in the revolving door of Donald Trump's legal team, Ty Cobb is out. Emmanuel Flood is in. The New York Times' Michael Schmidt explains.
Ty Cobb, the president's lawyer inside the White House who has been dealing with the special counsel's investigation, is going to retire. And the president is going to hire Emmett Flood, a longtime Washington lawyer who represented Bill Clinton during impeachment, also worked in the George W. Bush White House, represented Vice President Cheney, to deal with the special counsel's investigation. Mr. Flood is expected to take a more adversarial approach to the Mueller probe. Mr. Cobb had advocated a lot of cooperation. He wanted the president to sit down for an interview. But here we are in May of 2018, a year after Mueller was appointed, and the president will be going with a new lawyer inside the White House to deal with it.
And more. Stay tuned. Cambridge Analytica, the data firm the Trump campaign used during the 2016 election, shuttered its doors, both here and in the UK. The firm had been losing clients since it was revealed it had improperly obtained data on millions of Facebook users.
On this front, news on Cambridge Analytica, the company that allegedly harvested private information from millions of Facebook profiles. It is now shutting down. Breaking news here. Joining me now, NBC News producer Anna Schechter. Anna, so Cambridge Analytica shutting down.
Well, there was a conference call today. The caller was based in London, and they are shuttering all of the offices. So that's in the United States and in the UK. They decided that it was just too much of a liability. The name is toxic, and they're losing clients, losing money, and they decided to just shut down.
And just to back up here again for folks who've heard the name in the news, the Facebook thing, what was it in the last couple of weeks, in the last couple of months, in terms of the hit they've taken in sort of the court of public opinion? Explain what was going on there a little bit.
Up to 87 million Facebook user profiles and personal information was passed to Cambridge Analytica improperly, and they used that data to build models to work in U.S. elections. That was in 2014. They worked on campaigns, Republican campaigns, and even were embedded in state parties across the country. And this has created it was a huge scandal and dominated headlines for weeks.
And what I mean, they're shutting down now. Does their sort of phase of this story kind of end with their closing, or are there sort of unresolved issues here? Are we still likely to hear about Cambridge Analytica going forward?
There's a core group of people who founded SCL Group, which is the parent company based
Pay
in
attention.
The UK. They have been working in elections around the world for 25 years. Those key people are still there, are still
yep.
running SCL.
Yep.
And so I think we will be hearing more as this story unfolds.
In fact, I saw a new name for a company that it looks like they're already regrouping under. I seem to have lost it in the shuffle of all my mess here. But Cambridge Analytica may be gone like Blackwater is gone. But remember, Xi rose from the ashes, as will something will rise from Cambridge Analytica. All right, we've got Howie Klein coming up, but before then, we've got someone on the phones. Hi, who's this?
You talking to me, Nicole?
I'm talking to you.
It's Nicholas Miller down in San Cristobal, Mexico.
Hey, Nicholas.
Long time not checking in with you, and much to my chagrin and loss. You're looking really good, by the way, girl.
Oh, well, thank you.
No, you really are. You've got your energy all back. So good to see.
I got off of one of those drugs that I was taking.
There you go.
So I'm working on it.
Which
you know what? It was called Abilify. And
oh god.
Yeah, which was a bad one. And the withdrawals
yeah.
were pretty heinous. And
exactly.
But being on them had me so dulled that
yeah.
You know, it frankly was really difficult to get through a show. It's still sometimes hard to get through a show.
I had a friend on Abilify. I swear to God, it nearly killed her. She said it just took her whole spirit away from
yeah.
her.
Yeah, it did.
Listen, I just wanted to call, and don't let me forget, I think I'll just say what I was going to say at the end first. I extended an invitation to you down here a long time ago. It still stands, as I told
oh, thank
you it
you.
Would forever. You are a welcome person in our world. But what I wanted to call about was just to share some really good news of what's happening down here in Mexico, if that's okay.
Please. We could use good news.
Do you know about our candidate who goes by the initials AMLO, AMLO?
No.
Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador. He has run, this is his third run for the presidency. He's very, very, very far left. He makes Bernie sort of look like a Republican, amazingly. And he is now more than 20 points ahead here.
Wow.
He's sweeping it. He's absolutely sweeping it. The vote is on July 1st. Mexico is going to become very possibly an actual progressive country to the south of the United States, which would be amazingly ironic and wonderful.
Yeah, they may want to put up a wall to keep us out, huh?
It's not working. There are more than a million of us living down here now, very happily. So,
all right.
Anyway, well, that's not massive news to most Americans, but it's very important down here, and it will affect Mexican-American relations in a very, very big way. So get ready for something massive happening on July 1st down here.
Sounds good. We could use it. All right. Nicholas, it's
great. We just have to hope they don't assassinate him as they did the candidate named Colosio many years ago.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wish for the best, and I'm sure you'll do your work to help spread the word.
I got 115 Democrats registered to vote down here.
Very cool.
I'm trying my best.
Right.
And God bless you. You really are. You're looking terrific. Keep it up, girl. Whatever you're doing, do more of it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
the
call.
We need you in the world, dear. We need you in the world.
Oh, well, thank you, Nicholas.
Just thought I'd touch base. Love you.
Great to hear from you. Love you, too. All right. You know what? It's time. So let's get Howie Klein on the line, shall we?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're going to love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, the chat room just lives for the complimentary sweet and low. Hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole. I am just so freaked out right this second. I just got off the phone, two times with these really incredible stories that people want me to look into for Down with Tyranny. And one of them just shook me up so much. I don't know if you've heard. Are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, good. We've talked about Gil Cisneros, right? The guy who's running in Orange County. We have, right?
Yes.
Right. So this woman who, named Melissa Fazley, who's kind of a big-time political person down in Orange County, and she's running for the state assembly right now. But she had run for the DNC vice chair and came in close, but she didn't become it. But she's sort of a well-known political person down there. She just basically accused Gil Cisneros of everyone goes to him for money because he won $266 million in the lottery and he gives it out to people. Although there's always strings attached with him, but she went to ask him at a Democratic function. They were waiting for the elevator together, and she said, "Hey, can you donate to me?" And he was drunk and basically asked her if they could go back to her room.
Mm.
And he's a married guy, and she felt, "Oh, he's just drunk, and just leave it at that." And she said, "No, I have two roommates, and this ain't gonna happen." And then a few days later, he called her up and tried to solicit her again for sex.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it's very, very weird. And he's a DCCC candidate, of course. And, I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to do with this thing? And, I don't know. So just now, it's good that you called just now because I was just about to pick up the phone to speak to her, to speak more with her. And so, I don't know, there's a whole bunch of stuff like that happening all day today. I just spoke with Nina Ahmad, who is one of our favorite candidates of this cycle. She was running for Congress in Philadelphia, and then the state got ungerrymandered by the state Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. So all the districts changed, and she basically couldn't run in the district that she was hoping to run in. She didn't live in that district anymore, and her base in that district was separated into another district that included an incumbent Democrat who she didn't feel that it would be right to go after him. So she decided to run for lieutenant governor. And the guy who is running for lieutenant governor is, what's his name?
John Fetterman. John Fetterman.
Yes, Fetterman,
right.
Who was endorsed by Bernie yesterday, uh-huh. And who Blue America had backed for the Senate, and who's a really good guy, and I got to know him and like him, but there are a lot of caveats about the guy who's, you know, a trust fund baby and who's, you know, got a couple of awkward little things with black people and was just photographed running after some guy who turned out to just be a jogger. Mm. And Fetterman went after him with a shotgun, saying that, you know, that he thought the guy had, you know, was a threat to his family.
Oh, God.
And it's just a little awkward. And, you know, and when Bernie endorsed him yesterday, you know, I kind of wrote something. I don't know if it's up on my blog or not. If it's not up there, it's going to be up there momentarily, saying that, you know, is Bernie going for the most progressive person, or is he just going for the person who endorsed him?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you look at the two candidates, when you look at Nina, you see somebody who's like absolutely amazing. And when you look at Fetterman, there are a lot of questions there. He's a good guy. I'm not saying he's bad or he's Republican or anything like that. But is he like her? I mean, she was literally my favorite candidate. I hate ever to say, you know, I hate to pick between the candidates, but she's amazing. And she was, you know, and I don't know. I felt like, oh, really? Can we can't endorse him, but should we endorse her and go and leave him in the dust, even though we like him, and even though Bernie endorsed him? And it really left me, you know, a little bit crazy. And then she just called me and just read me the riot act, and it was really, really disturbing. I mean, she was like, you know, yelling and screaming at me in a way. You know, I don't think she was actually raising her voice at all, but to me, it sounded like yelling and screaming because she made me feel guilty.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. So I have to talk to John Amato and Digby about this, because we had kind of all thought, well, probably we'll stay neutral in this thing. But, you know, that isn't the right thing. We know she's, you know, every now and then you get to a candidate who's a real game changer. They're not just someone who's kind of good or even very good. They're someone who goes beyond that, who can make a difference in the world. And there aren't many candidates who can stand up and make a difference in the world and really change the situation. But I always thought Nina was that. I mean, Nina has proven to be that. So I don't know. Anyway, that's what was going on for the last half hour before you rang the phone.
Wow. That, you know, look, I mean, it's a terrible spot to be in, but it's also a good spot to be in, that the fact that there are two really good progressive candidates for lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
If we could look at it like that.
It is. I still have to, you know, be able to get this straight in my mind, straight enough so I can explain it to Digby and John, so that they can understand what I'm even talking about. Since we kind of had decided to try to be neutral, because, you know, we like Fetterman. You know, like I said, I got to know him. It's just, he's no Nina Ahmad. I mean, he's good. She's amazing.
That might be the answer, but,
yeah,
if she's that great,
she is that great. I mean, she is, you know, I don't know that we don't get many candidates who are as good as her. That's how incredible she is.
Wow.
She's really, really amazing.
Well, then maybe you've answered your own question. But again, for those who don't know, the reason you mentioned John Amato of Crooks and Liars and, of course, Digby of Digby's Hullabaloo is because the three of you together make up the core of Blue America. You vet the candidates and you decide who you're going to endorse and you do all the fundraising for them and come up with some contests to help raise money and everything else that goes along with being Blue America.
Exactly. So, speaking of Blue America, there has never been a time that you and I have spoken in months and months and months that David Keith hasn't called in the middle of us speaking, and that just happened just now. There, I don't know if you could hear someone try and interrupt, but that's him.
Oh, that's so
and,
funny!
That happens every single week, and every week I say, the time doesn't change. This is when I'm on the air. And it doesn't change. And that David Keith, by the way, is Randy Bryce's campaign manager.
Right. Randy Bryce, who's got to be riding high right now. How's he been in the weeks since the news broke that Paul Ryan is not running for re-election?
Well, he feels really good about that, of course. But on the other hand, the Republicans are just unleashing the dogs. They are... Ryan had done opposition research. They had looked into everything that there was to look into about him, and they had sort of put that together, but they hadn't really put it out there. So the new guy who's like who had been Ryan's staffer and who's a corporate attorney, he's decided, like, let's go for this right now and let's do everything to smear him and make him look bad. So, they're doing it. I mean, people don't always know that they're doing it. They do it in such a way that, even the people who, in the media who they're feeding this stuff to don't realize that they're helping the Republicans. So some of this is happening and it's, pretty shocking to them. They weren't necessarily expecting it this early. And, they're just going after him and attacking him. Really viciously, going back into past history. I don't know anybody in the world who, in terms of married couples, who haven't had problems. And Randy and his wife are divorced, and they share their son. He does it sometimes, and she does it sometimes. And it's a big deal in his life, but there are moments, there have been moments that weren't wonderful. I mean, do you know anybody who's divorced where everything was all peaches and cream? It doesn't work that way.
No.
There is real life. And they dug up everything they could dig up, and they're, throwing it back at him in really, really nasty ways. I mean, he and his wife are reconciled. They're very, very cooperative. Everything is fine now. But the Republicans have dug back into the past, and they're just, sort of putting it out there as though, this is Randy. He's an awful, horrible person. Look what he did to this poor woman. He's a monster. That shakes up anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and look, another story that I wanted to bring up with you is Alan Grayson has finally said where he's running for re-election. He had said some time ago that he was going to run for Congress again here in Florida, but he hadn't announced what district he's running in, and now he has, that he's going to run in his old district, the ninth.
Yeah.
But he went through an ugly divorce, and where his ex-wife made some allegations against him. This seems to be par for the course when a politician gets divorced, some of the ugliness spills over into their public life.
Right. And with Alan Grayson, it was different. It wasn't really a divorce. So it was an annulment. She had been married when she married him. But it's a long, long time ago, and he didn't know that. And when he found out, he was flipping out. But he already was, very much out of love with her, and it wasn't a good relationship. And she had, for one reason or another, she had already gone crazy. And she accused him of things, but fortunately, there were tapes. So she's accusing him of hitting her. And she called the police, and, there was a tape of that call where the police said, well, did he hit you? And she said, no, I hit him.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a videotape that someone had taken of the incident, where he goes to the house to get some of his his toothbrush or whatever, and she attacks him physically.
Right.
He didn't even defend himself. He just and this is all on tape. So she and Alan's political enemies are saying, you know, he beat up a woman. Well, the video doesn't show that. The video shows him, you know, he basically, the closest he came to physical with her was holding his arm up over his face so she couldn't scratch his eyes out. And she's just attacking and attacking, and he never hit back. And everyone in Orlando knows that. They've seen that video all over TV news, so there's no problem for him with that. But, outside people don't know that. People outside, Alan has talked to people. He showed me the video. But a lot of people think, even the way you just said, there have been problems with his divorce. You know,
well,
like
allegations
I said, it wasn't
made,
a divorce.
Made by his ex-wife.
He won every case that there was. Even the children didn't want to be with her.
Wow.
Even the young children didn't want to be with her. She bit one of them very, very badly. And, the older children, there was no problem. They just, were old enough to just walk away. But the younger kids tried to escape from her, and it was a real problem. But in the end, the judges found in his favor every single time, including the annulment. The marriage was annulled, so there was no divorce there.
Wow.
Anyway, Alan announced that he's running. I will tell you that the person who is the current congressman, Darren Soto, is no friend of progressives.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in the state legislature, he had an A-plus from the NRA. He was one of their minions. He voted against the right of women to get an abortion under any circumstance.
Wow.
So no abortions, period.
Wow.
And he is the opposite of a progressive. He joined the New Dems, and he votes with the New Dems. I mean, I wrote in a post the other day that when Nancy Pelosi stood on the floor of the House begging Democrats to not vote for Trump's budget bill, and making that case, remember, she stood on that floor for 8 hours in high heels?
I remember, Yeah.
And, all of the other Puerto Rican, American, Americans of Puerto Rican heritage who are in the House, all listened to what she said. They all voted no. And only one voted yes, and that was Darren Soto.
Wow.
And why did he vote yes? Because that's what the New Dems did. So he voted against the Democrats, joined the Republicans, because that's what the New Dems did. And that's who he is. He is a guy who's never accomplished anything. I mean, Alan Grayson, whether you like him or you don't like him, he is a guy who gets things done. He passed more legislation under the Republicans. He would manage to get amendments put onto their bills more than any other member of Congress, Republican or Democrat. Alan Grayson gets stuff done. Alan Grayson is a guy with big ideas. That's who he is, and that's how he should be judged. And Darren Soto is like a bump on a log. He doesn't do anything. Yeah, he votes yes or no on a bill. Half the time he votes properly, and half the time he votes terribly. And sits there and has no ideas and does nothing. And he's nothing like Alan Grayson. Alan Grayson, again, like I've talked about a few minutes ago about Nina Ahmad, Alan Grayson is one of the few members of Congress, or when he was a member of Congress, who gets things done. He can clarify issues so that people understand what the issues are. So, people didn't know exactly what the health care bill was all about until Alan Grayson got on the stage on the floor of the House, and he said, Republican health care, die quickly.
That's right.
And everyone remembers that. Alan has that ability to make people understand complicated things. And he has the ability to work across the aisle in a very, very different way than the New Dems and the Blue Dogs do. The New Dems and the Blue Dogs love talking about how you have to work with the Republicans if you're going to get anything done. But their idea of working with the Republicans is basically just surrender to the Republicans and their reactionary ideas and just go along with them. Well, that isn't what Alan Grayson means. He works with the Republicans by going and finding common ground on progressive ideas. And they don't even realize sometimes that they're supporting really progressive ideas because Alan talks them into why it's good for their own constituents in a way that makes them vote for the things that he has proposed. And there really were no other members of the House, almost no other members of the House, who had the ability to do that. That's why I like, you know, Pramila Jayapal so much. She's another one who can do that. She used to do it in the state senate in Washington State, and now she does it in Congress. And there aren't that many Democrats who know how to do it. It's a real talent. And when someone can do that, it's a blessing. And, you know, Darren Soto is so far down the evolutionary tree that he's never going to learn how to do that or even learn what that means. To him, being bipartisan means just, you know, voting for whatever the Republicans want you to vote for.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with what being bipartisan. Being bipartisan is finding common ground in things that are going to help everybody's constituents. And it's a rare talent. And Pramila does it and Grayson does it. Anyway, you asked a simple question. And I went off on something. Now I don't remember what you were getting at. I'm sure you wanted me to talk about something.
No, well, and just what you did talk about, just saying that in the land of Oppo research, they're going to pull out stuff having to do with marriages and failed marriages. And we were talking about Randy Bryce and what's going on in Wisconsin.
Now I remember how I got off on that little tangent, because one of Soto's guys came up to Alan and he said, look, if you run in our district, we know all of the dirt on you, and we are going to mercilessly use it against you.
Wow.
And at the same time, Soto is going to the newspapers and saying to them, I run a clean campaign, and Grayson is filthy, and he's going to go after me, and I'm not even going to respond to any of his slander. And, you know, Alan Grayson never goes up against Democrats. He's never has in any of his primaries, and he never will. So it's kind of like amusing that Soto is saying this kind of stuff right at the time when one of his henchmen is telling Alan that they're going to destroy his reputation.
Unbelievable. Well, this is the ugly world of politics, and the Democratic Party has been showing itself to be pretty ugly. I saw where yesterday, speaking to the Boston Globe, Nancy Pelosi said that she intends to run for speaker again should the Democrats win back the House, which it's looking likely they will. You have a post going up at Down with Tyranny tomorrow. Will the House Democrats ever free themselves of their geriatric leadership and move into the future? Does Nancy Pelosi not understand that they need to groom the next generation?
Well, she thinks she is grooming the next generation. You know, she is determined to get Joe Crowley in there as the next to follow her into the speaker's chair. He's literally the most corrupt Democrat in the House, and he's just terrible. And you know, there are really good members, like I said. I mean, someone like Pramila Jayapal. I mean, Pramila is like amazing. I mean, what a difference that would make for her to do it. Or someone like Ted Lieu, who we've been sort of pushing in for people to think about a guy like Ted Lieu becoming the speaker instead of a corrupt character like Joe Crowley. But Pelosi wants what Pelosi, you know, what she wants. Now, someone told me the other day, a political person in San Francisco, where I used to live there, and I've kept up some of my contacts, and someone who I respect in San Francisco politics told me Nancy's real thing right now is to just make sure that one of her daughters gets her seat. And that's really what she cares about, making sure the daughter gets the seat. And, you know, that's not what America is all about. I mean, that's what, like, England used to be about in the 1800s, but it's not what the United States has ever been about. And yet we have that so many times in so many places. I remember laughing there's a few times this happened, but I remember laughing when Duncan Hunter was finally driven out of Congress, a guy from east of San Diego, San Diego County, but not where anyone lives, basically the desert and mountains east of San Diego. Duncan Hunter, who was a very, very corrupt Republican, when he left, Duncan Hunter Jr., his alcoholic son, took the seat. And no one to this day even understands that they're voting for the son, not for the father. I mean, they must think that that they've been voting for the same guy for 100 years.
Wow.
But it's his drunken son who's likely going to go to jail for stealing campaign funds. But and you see that all the time. I mean, I remember a poll way, way back when there were people who voted for George W. Bush who literally thought they were voting for George H.W. Bush, the father. They didn't understand they were voting for the wrong president.
Oh, my God.
I mean, people are just sort of, you know, have other things on their mind, not necessarily politics.
No, they don't pay attention. That's what's so scary. Yep. Is, you know, obviously I'm not for a poll tax, but it would be nice if you got the idea that people knew who they were voting for when they filled in a bubble or pulled a lever.
I know. How do you do that, though? I mean, there's like almost no way to do it. You know, I think, well, you know, obviously anyone who voted for Donald Trump should not really be allowed to ever vote again. But, you know, you can't do that.
No, unfortunately, you can't. And they still don't get it. The West Virginia primary is coming up next Tuesday, and there's a battle for the Republican nomination for Senate to run against Joe Manchin. Mitch McConnell has been, it seems, leading the charge against Don Blankenship. Don Blankenship, the coal magnate who spent a year in jail for killing a lot of coal miners.
28.
Wow. And he was looking pretty good there for a while. Do you think McConnell's campaign against him is working?
Yes. I think that they're destroying him. And the way he's responding is to try to destroy McConnell. I mean, he brought up the whole thing about how McConnell is married to
Elaine Chao,
right, who's been in a couple of different cabinets. She was labor secretary under Bush. Now she's the transportation secretary under Trump, and she's Chinese. Her father is she's a Chinese American. Her father is Chinese, and they own a huge shipping company. And they were smuggling cocaine from Colombia into Europe, and this is the money that has underlined or been the underpinnings of McConnell's career. I mean, he wasn't a rich guy, and he's never worked. He's only been in politics. He's never had a job. And he's very, very wealthy now, and it's coming from the shipping company, all his wealth. And Blankenship is referring to him as Cocaine Mitch.
Wow.
And he has an ad out, a TV ad, that refers to McConnell as Cocaine Mitch. And McConnell is a closet case, and one of his former lovers, is talking about Blankenship as being insane. So it's an incredible fight. It's a three-way fight, or a four-way fight if you want to include Mitch McConnell. But there are three Republicans who are running, and all of whom are about equal in the race. I mean, the one thing that, you know, this is a little aside, but the one thing you know is going to be that the next senator from West Virginia is going to be an arch conservative, whether it's one of the three Republicans or Joe Manchin.
You
know that poor West Virginia is going to be stuck with another conservative.
Right.
The irony of all this is that West Virginia is a lot of West Virginia, big swaths of West Virginia, are Bernie territory. That's the real irony. There were county after county after county where Bernie didn't just beat Hillary in the primary, but on the same day got more votes, in some cases way more votes, than Trump did.
Wow.
People there want change, and they were very, very happy with Bernie Sanders.
Isn't that amazing? The what ifs? If only things had been different, you know, what a different place we'd be sitting in today.
Yep.
Oh boy. Oh well. All right, Howie Klein. We're just about out of time, so we may as well wrap it up here. Again, there's the post on will the House Democrats ever free themselves of their geriatric leadership and move into the future? We'll be up at downwithtyranny.com tomorrow. And this Tuesday, we've got a few primaries. So, I'll remind everyone. Thanks, by the way, for, last week we had, who was it? Jenny Marshall.
You had Jenny from North Carolina. Her primary is next Tuesday.
Right, and Dan Cannon of Indiana.
And then Dan Cannon, who's one of these amazing candidates that I was talking about, he's from Indiana. So he's got his primary. And then there are also the Ohio primaries. So there's a whole bunch of really intense primaries a week from Tuesday. I mean, this coming Tuesday. A week from last Tuesday.
Yes. So we'll keep focused on that. Thank you, Howie Klein. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right, Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com and, of course, the Blue America PAC, who finds some of the best progressive candidates out there and helps raise money for them. Support them.